Okay, Haxamea again. Hope everybody is enjoying this wonderful Sukkot in the wilderness. And actually, the name of the message today is Sukkot and the wilderness. Excuse me. So I've said this before, Sukkot is in the seventh month. It's the seventh feast, and it lasts for 7 days. And I've always said, you know, there's a chance that the bride will flee to the wilderness at Sukkot because we're already out of society dwelling in temporary dwellings and sometimes even staying in tents. So there's always that chance that that'll happen at Sukkot, you know. In Leviticus 23, in verse 39, it says, also in the 15th day of the seventh month, when you gather the increase of the land, you shall keep the feast of Yahweh 7 days. On the first day, a holy day Sabbath, and on the eighth day, a holy day Sabbath. And you shall take to yourselves on the first day the fruit of majestic trees, palm trees, boughs of thick oak trees, willows of the valley, and rejoice before Yahweh your Elohim 7 days. And you shall celebrate a feast to Yahweh 7 days in a year, a never-ending statute throughout your generations. In the seventh month you shall keep it. You shall sit in Sukkot for 7 days. All who are native in Israel shall sit in Sukkot. So that's one of the things I miss when we're not in Israel, is sitting in the Sukkot. So that your generations shall know that I caused the sons of Israel to live in Sukkot. When I brought them out of the land of Egypt, I am Yahweh your Elohim. And Moses declared the appointed feast of Yahweh to the sons of Israel. So the feast of Sukkot, which pictures the millennium, of course, is really also to show us about staying in temporary dwellings, to remind us we're simply sojourners on the earth. So it's a time where, out of all the festivals, it's the most festival time where we're actually commanded to have a good time. Can you imagine that? You'd have to be commanded, go out, I'm commanding you, have a good time. And yet at the same rate, it's having a good time with the simple things of life. You know, it's not staying in 5-star Hilton hotels and all that kind of stuff, and cruise ships, which a lot of the Church of God groups, you know, that's what it came down to as the years went by. But it's about the simplicity of life, and that's why the children of Israel stayed in those temporary dwellings for 40 years in the wilderness. We don't know for sure if they were sukkah-type style things, what kind of tent they try to make, but they, you know, when you have 2 million people there and you're moving from place to place, I can guarantee you it was a very, very simple type dwelling that they stayed in. Showing us that our self, our body, is nothing more than a sukkah. It's a temporary dwelling. We're temporarily in this body in the same way that Sukkot, 7 days, goes very, very fast. Our life of maybe 7 decades, right, goes very, very fast. Deuteronomy 14 and verse 22. And it's a great time to get our priorities straight. Deuteronomy 14 and verse 22. He says, tithing, you will tithe all the increase of your seed that the field yields year by year. And we said this before. So you make $100, you put $10 to the side. Tithing, you will tithe. You tithe everything that comes by. And now that $10 is on the side, you already tithed it. And he says, you will eat before Yahweh Elohim in the place which he shall choose to cause his name to dwell there. The tithe of the grain, of the wine, of the oil, of the firstling of your herd, of your flock. You shall learn to fear Yahweh Elohim all your days. So, if it was 100 pieces of corn and you tithe 10, you put 10 on the side, you're allowed to take 1/10 of your tithe and use it for the feast. Use it for Sukkot. Isn't Yahweh good? So here it is. He's making a partnership with you. And he's saying, okay, let's be partners. And he's not saying 50-50. And actually, he could make it 90-10 the other way. If he took 90% and gave us 10, I'd be happy with that. Because anything that Yahweh's a partner in is going to be blessed. And you're going to make 1,000 times more than you would ever make if you were doing it on your own. But Yahweh doesn't do that. He doesn't even say 50-50. He says you can keep 90% of whatever you make. He only wants 10%. And he doesn't even want it for himself. He wants it for helping build the congregation up, for helping the poor, helping the widow, all these other things that come from there. And even in his 10%, he allows us to take 10% of that for the feast. What a great Elohim we serve. And if the way is too long for you, so you cannot carry it, he's talking about if it's literally food that you're making, that Yahweh Elohim will choose to set his name there, when Yahweh Elohim will bless you, then you will give it for silver. You know, you bring, sell it, make money, bind it, the silver in your hand, and you shall go to the place which Yahweh your Elohim shall choose. And you shall pay the silver for whatever your soul rightly desires, for oxen, for sheep, for wine, for fermented drink, or whatever your soul desires. And you shall eat there before Yahweh Elohim, and you shall rejoice, you and your household. Rice, right? You could put rice in there. You could put anything. You know, anything that we're eating. Of course, the harvest fruits, too, which are always great. So, Sukkot in the wilderness are both about simplicity of life, teaching values what is important. And really, it's Sukkot. That's what it's all about. It's all about the wilderness. They really are synonymous together. Ecclesiastes 2, and I've said this before, Ecclesiastes is the book that is read at Sukkot time. And I think a great book that really brings it in perspective with that. So Ecclesiastes 2 and verse 22. He says, well, what is there for a man in all his labor, in striving of his heart, which he labored under the sun? For all his days are sorrows, and his task is grief. Yea, his heart does not even take rest in the night. There is also vanity to him. Is it not good that he should eat and drink, and that he should make his soul see good in his labor? This also I saw that it is from the hand of Elohim, right? So that's basically what he's saying. And all the vanity of life, everything is vanity. But what is, you know, the blessing of a man, you know, that he can eat and drink and enjoy the fruit of his labor. And in this world, unfortunately, a lot of people can't do that. They work and they work and they work, and they can't even enjoy it. They can't even pay their bills from the money they're making. And that's the trap of commercial Babylon, like we've talked about many times. Let's go back to Ecclesiastes 1. And I'll read actually all 18 verses. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What is the profit to a man in all his labor which he labors under the sun? A generation passes away, another generation comes, but the earth stands forever. The sun also rises, and the sun also, even panting to its place, it rises there again. The wind goes toward the south and turning around to the north. The wind is going around and around, and the wind returns on its circuits. All the rivers are going to the sea, yet the sea is not full. To the place where the rivers are going, there they are returning to go again. Right? Everything just keeps going around in the same. We know Yahweh works in the circular. And he's kind of saying, what is the meaning to it all, right? All words are wearisome. A man is not able to say it. The eye is not satisfied to see, nor is the ear filled with hearing. And it's so true that in life, the people that seem to have more seem to be the most unhappy people. The ones that are the big millionaires and billionaires, and the more that somebody gets, the more they want. And I always wonder, how can somebody that is a multimillionaire, he has 10 million, 50 million, you know, 100 million, how could they go bankrupt? How on earth can you lose everything? Because if you spent, you know, $10,000 a day for the rest of your life, you couldn't spend that much money that you have. And it's because they're not satisfied. And they want more. And once they have 10 million, they want 100 million. And once they have 100 million, they want a billion. And once they have a billion, they want 10 billion. And that's man's part of vanity, you know, that he's never satisfied with what he has, even though he knows he couldn't even use what he does have. And it's just that corrupted human nature that always has to have more. And like Yahweh showed me several years back, that I say that happiness is not wanting more, but being satisfied with less. You know, because there's so little we really need to be satisfied with. And that's what Sukkot shows us, right? We don't need 5-star hotels, and we don't need cruise ships, and we don't need, you know, Cadillac cars and all this other stuff. What do we need? We need good family and friends and nice food. And that's about it. Food and fellowship. And that's what it's all about. That which has been, it is that which shall be. And that which has been done, it is that which will be done. And there is no new thing under the sun. Is there a thing of which might say, see this, it is new. It has already been for the ages which were before us. And Solomon didn't live in our time, so there's some evil things that he probably couldn't even think of in his whole lifetime. But really, it's the same evil, I guess, that was happening going back, like it's in the days of Noah and the days of Lot. It's just that man has more things to do the evil in a greater way. That's the only difference probably you have today. There is no memory of former things, yea, there, nor is there any memory for them of which will be afterward, which those who will be at the last. I, the preacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem, and I gave my heart to seek and to investigate by wisdom concerning all which is done under the heavens. It is an evil task Elohim has given to the sons of men to be afflicted by it. I have seen all the works which are done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and striving after wind. What is crooked cannot be made straight, and that lacking cannot be weighed out. I spoke with my heart, saying, lo, I have become great and have increased wisdom over all that have been over Jerusalem before me. Yea, my heart has seen much wisdom and knowledge, and I gave my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I know that this also is striving after wind. For in much wisdom is much grief, and he who increases knowledge increases pain. Wow. And the sad part is it really is true in the world, right? When you're striving after things of the world, this is very true. And the difference is, though, when you're looking at simplicity of life, it doesn't have to be that way. And that's what Sukkot in the wilderness is about. It's about to purify our minds. It's about to bring us back at Sukkot every year and now in the wilderness for the last few years before Yeshua returns to get our corrupted human nature minds back on the right things we should be thinking about. 1 Timothy 6 and verse 6. First Timothy 6 and verse 6 says, but our gain is greater contentment, for it is the worship of Elohim, right? Our gain is not mammon, it's contentment. The greater contentment you have, the greater gain you have, because the happier you're going to be. And some of the most happiest people I ever met in my life are some of the brethren in the third world that have very little mammon, but have great contentment. For we have brought nothing into the world, and it is plain, neither can we carry anything out, right? At the end of the day, remember we were in that cemetery not that long ago? And we were showing, the dust you are, the dust you shall return. Everybody's going to end up there, no matter whether you're rich or poor, whatever. Everybody in the end of time is going to end up in that cemetery. And you know what? Whether you're a millionaire or whether you're a homeless person, you all end up in the same box, right? You end up in a 6-foot box because that's it. So that's the bottom line of it. We brought nothing into the world, and there's nothing you're going to carry out into the world. But having food and clothing, let us be satisfied with these, right? Doesn't even say food and clothing. Doesn't even say shelter. And that's Sukkot. You're in temporary dwellings. And the Israelites, they went from place to place. But with food in clothing, let us be satisfied. But those purposing to be rich fall into temptation and a snare, many foolish and hurtful lusts, which plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all evils, and it's so true, by means of which some have lusted after were seduced from the faith, and they themselves pierced through by many pains. And I can't tell you through the years how many people that have contacted me and counseled them, and good people, nice people, friendly people, but the thing that stopped them from making the commitment was they were going to lose their job over Shabbat. And they don't make that commitment. Can you imagine? Jobs come and jobs go. And like I said, when you're on your deathbed and you know your time is going, you're going to be thinking of your family. You're going to be thinking of your relationship with Yahweh. And I can guarantee you the last thing you'll be thinking of is any job you had. Jobs come and jobs go. That's all the, you know, just a mean. We live in this world under the curse that Satan brought on mankind, that you have to get your bread and your food by the sweat of your brow. but you will not remember those things on your deathbed. But the love of money is a root of all evil. You know, and that's why sometimes, like I said, is it really a blessing? Yahweh can be giving somebody more money or allowing them, but it's not Yahweh. It's coming from the prince of the power of the air. It's coming from the G.O.D. of commercial Babylon that's enticing people with it to bring them out of the truth. So it's amazing that these scriptures are so clear, and yet for so many people, they still allow it. They still allow the temptation of things and houses and money and power and career get in front of the simplicity that they could have in life. Psalm 90, which I think is one of the most amazing psalms, the only one written by Moses, and you don't really hear many people talk about it, you know. I'm going to read verse 1 to 3 and then drop down to verse 9. A prayer of Moses, the man of Elohim. O Yahweh, you have been our dwelling place in all generations. Before the mountains were born or ever, you had formed the earth and the world. Even from everlasting to everlasting, you are El. You turn man to dust and say, return, O sons of men, right? To dust we come, to dust we shall return. Verse 9. For all our days pass away in your wrath. We finish our years like a sigh. The days of our years are 70, and if by any strength we live 80 years, yet their pride is labor and vanity, right? Labor and vanity, striving after wind, always trying to get more for what? For nothing. For it soon passes, and we fly away. Verse 12, so teach us to number our days, so that we may bring a heart of wisdom. And that's the thing in life, you know. Death is sorrowful. We miss somebody when somebody dies. But in the world, I've seen it where people just, somebody dies and they're just, it's almost like they can't even function anymore. And it's as if we've been here 6,000 years. We know everybody's going to die. So yes, it's natural to mourn. It's natural to cry. It would be unnatural not to. But there's a point where you have to move on because it's going to happen to everybody. But if you're trusting in this life, oh yeah, then you will cry and cry and cry because you have no hope of anything else but this. And that's the sad part you see in the world, that people break down. They wind up having nervous breakdowns. They can't function ever again because somebody died. Because that's their only hope, is in this world. So we have to learn to number our days. You know, every one of us. Every one of us, every day, and you never know which day is going to be it. You know, in the cemetery, we saw 16-year-old children that died. We saw a 4-year-old that died. We saw someone 99 years old. But in the end, everyone's going to get there. That's the last destination of each and every person, waiting for the resurrection, of course. Life is short. Moses wrote this in the wilderness, right? He's in the wilderness 40 years, and he's writing this. So Sukkot pictures the kingdom. We should be thinking about the kingdom, which is eternal. Because in the kingdom, there will be no death. In the kingdom, there will be no end. In the kingdom, there will be no sorrow. Because it's an eternal state. Book of Job. Amazing book. Oldest book in the Bible. Job is at least contemporary with Abraham or older than Abraham. And look what he says. Job 9, verse 25 and 26. Now my days are swifter than a runner. They flee away. They see no good. They have passed away like the ships made of reed, as an eagle swoops on food. Right? They come and they go, and they really do quick. And I remember as a child when people used to say that, you know, when I was a teenager and whatever, and older people, relatives, and old people saying how fast, and I'm chuckling, you know, ah. But then you get older and you realize, wow, it does go fast. Woo! It goes faster than you can ever imagine. And I think as time is being shortened, you know, because it's interesting. Scientifically, they say a year is not, it's a little shorter than it used to be, only by seconds, but it is shortened, you know. And because of the way the world is, it certainly seems like it's going faster, that time is going much faster than it used to. Genesis 3 and verse 19. By the sweat of your face, you will eat bread until you return to the ground. For you have been taken out of it, for you are dust, to dust you shall return, just like we read before. We will return to the dust when we die, We're basically dirt and water, and that's where we're going back to. Hebrews 9 and verse 27. As it is reserved for men once to die and after this judgment. So it's for everyone. Everyone lives and everyone's going to die. Life is short, but it's also a test. All that matters is where we will be on judgment day. So it's not the quantity of how long you live. It's the quality of how long you live. And I remember when we left Babylon, you know, and my mom was real sad, and we would visit, and like the whole week before we were leaving, you could see she's getting sick because we're going to be leaving and crying, and what if I don't see you again? And I said, Mom, if we stayed an extra day, would that make you feel any better? If we stayed an extra week, would it make you feel any better? If we stayed an extra month, if we stayed an extra year, it wouldn't make a difference because the day's still going to come that we're going to be going again. And that's time. You know, time stops for nothing. So when you're looking at eternity, though, you know, that got me. I'd rather live for eternity. I'd rather live for something that there is no end, where I don't ever have to say goodbye, where there doesn't have to ever be sorrow. But in this life, there's always going to be that. You know, like we read in Ecclesiastes chapter 3, there's a time for this, there's a time for that, you know. So in the end of the day, if you're living for this world, you're going to run out of time, and sooner than later. And you never know when, you know, that's the thing. Nobody never knows when their last day is coming up. And that's why we have to live for Yahweh. We have to learn to number our days. And like I said, life is a test. It's short. All that matters is where will you be on judgment day when you can live forever or you can just go to the lake of fire and cease to exist forever, one or the other. 2 Corinthians 5. And like I said, Sukkot and the wilderness teach us this. Simplicity of life. Having focus on our priorities. And again, the priority is what you get done. You could say Yahweh is your priority. But if you claim every week you don't have enough time to study, you don't have enough time to pray, you don't have enough time to ministry, then by definition, he's not your priority. He simply isn't. The priority is what you get done. It's not what you say, it's what you do. It's just like faith. So 2 Corinthians 5, 1 through 9. For we know that if our earthly house of this tabernacle were destroyed, we still have a building made from Elohim, a house not made with hands, eternal in heaven, right? So we're not trying to hold on to this body. We're to die to the flesh every day. Because our body is not enhancing us. Our body is limiting us. And yet people try to hold on to this instead of living for eternity, living for where, like I said, the speed of thought. Boom, you could be in China. You're never sick, never sorrowful. You don't need food. You'll eat food for enjoyment, but you don't have to eat it for substance to live. For also in this we groan greatly, desiring to be clothed with our dwelling place out of heaven. If indeed in being clothed, we shall not be found naked. Wow. So like I said, naked without a covering. Remember Adam when he was found naked? So that's what's happening now. That as we are living, and as we have our priorities straight, and as we're building fruit, we are being clothed with spiritual clothes of kings and priests. And you know what? When the kingdom comes, everything physical will be burned. There's going to be a new heavens and a new earth. Every single thing is made of matter. It'll all be gone. All the trees, all the grass, anything you own, anything. So you know what will remain? The spiritual character that you're building. So that's what he's saying here. If indeed being clothed, we shall not be found naked. Meaning that when all the earthly things are gone, what do you have left? Are you building those nine fruits of the Spirit? You know, are you building fruit for the kingdom? You don't want to be left naked, because if you're left naked, you're not going to be there. For indeed, being in this earthly house, we groan because of its weight. Yet we are unwilling to leave it, but rather wish to add to it. So that the death may be swallowed up by life, right? So that's Ecclesiastes all over again. As human beings, we're trying to add to this. Instead of dying to the flesh daily, we're trying to add to our fleshly things. And, you know, we keep adding to our things and we don't want to let them go. And we keep stacking them up in the closet. And when that's done, we'll stack them in the garage. And when that's done, we'll stack them in the basement. And when that's done, we'll get a shed outside, and when that's done, we'll buy more, and we keep buying and buying and buying and building and stacking, and then we die. And then somebody comes and takes all our junk, and sells it or throws it away or brings it down. And that's the life cycle, and it just keeps going on and on and on. So why on earth are we, why when already we have a shirt, we have pants, you know, we have all the things we need, why do we keep trying to get more? The Bible says, not if you have 10 shirts and your brother has none, give. He says, if you have two. If you have two and he has none, give to him. And yet we have this mentality, this Babylonian mentality of storing and stacking and buying and getting, even if we have it. And that's what covetousness is. It's acquiring something you don't need, something you already have. It's not that only if you can't afford it. It doesn't matter if you can afford it. It's that you don't need it, because there's always somebody else that would need it. So, verse 5, now he who has prepared for us, this very thing is Elohim, who also has given to us the down payment of his Spirit. Therefore, we know and we are convinced that so long as we dwell in the body, we are absent from home, from our master. Flesh and blood does not inherit the kingdom of Yahweh. So why are we trying to hold on to it? Why are we so sorrowful? And again, we love people. So when someone dies, yes, we do mourn and we're sorrowful. But we should be glad. When a believer dies, we should be throwing a party. They're home. The next waking moment is in the kingdom. You know, so yes, there's nothing wrong with mourning for ourselves and mourning for that person. But we have to keep it in perspective. You know, if we really believe it, that person's next waking moment will be in the kingdom with Yahweh. We walk by faith, not by sight. And that's the problem. And that's what the wilderness shows us, that's what Sukkot shows us, right? We stay in our little tents, you know, or our little temporary dwelling. We stay out in the wilderness. We have some good food together. We have fellowship, and that's life. That's all it's about. It's about just having a relationship with Yahweh and our fellow man. We walk by faith, not by sight. This is why we are fully confident and think it good rather to be absent from the body than to be present with our master. It's not this life we should be holding on to. Because of this, whether present or absent, we are striving to be pleasing to him. So that's Sukkot in the wilderness in a nutshell. It's a great scripture there in 2 Corinthians. Leviticus 23 and verse 42. Again, we read this. I'll read it one more time. You shall sit in Sukkah for 7 days. All who are native in Israel shall sit in Sukkahs, so that your generation shall know that I caused the sons of Israel to live in Sukkahs when I brought them out of the land of Egypt. So, wow, they lived in that for 40 years, in those Sukkahs. We do it for a week to remember that our body is a Sukkah. And as you put the fruits in the Sukkah, right? You put the pomegranate and the figs and all the harvest fruits in there, and you put the boughs of the branches, and we've did it many, many times. What happens? In that 1 week, it all shrivels. It all rotten. Just 1 week. At the end of Sukkah, when we're taking it apart, we're seeing the leaves that were all green the day we put them on are now all yellow. It happens so quick. And that's what happens. We get to Sukkot. We're all excited. We're all excited. We're with each other. We're having a great time. And then all of a sudden, I blink, and it's the end. It's over. Another year is gone. Everybody's crying. You know, we always, every time we listen to the music in a car of Yah, take up your holy throne. Visually, I think of everyone crying in the room in Jerusalem. And that's life, you know. That's okay. That's the way it goes. But it comes and goes so fast, and so does your life. And that's what we're supposed to be getting out of this. We're supposed to be realizing in these few tiny short years here, why on earth am I doing anything but serving Yahweh and my fellow man? All else is vanity. And like I said, you have these people that are multi-millionaires and billionaires that really could be changing the world in such a way. You know, can you imagine in this technological world we live in, why should there be one person that is starving? I don't care what the weather is. They have food stored up for years and years and years. How on earth can anyone not have food to eat? And yet they do. And actually, they don't just have it. These billionaires, that's the plan. So instead of using that time on this earth, this short time, to make life better for the less fortunate, they're trying to enslave the world. And that's the world of commercial Babylon. That's the world of Satan. That's the world that he's allowed to do this in. But we have something better. We're part of a better world. We're part of a better kingdom. And that's the message we should be bringing to everybody we meet. Whether it's just a smile to somebody on the street, or a friendly hello to the woman at the checkout counter in the supermarket, whatever it is. We should be bringing that kingdom of Yahweh mentality in everything we do in life. Psalm 78, verse 38. Because Israel never learned this, even 40 years, not living, not a week of it, but 40 years in the wilderness, they never learned it. And like we heard in the sermonette, pride, that was one of the biggest things with Israel, was pride. Psalm 78 in verse 38. But he, being merciful, atoned for their iniquity and did not destroy. And he added to turn away his anger and did not stir up all his wrath. For he remembered that they were flesh, a breath passing away and not returning, right? So Yahweh understands this. He knows what we are. He knows our limitations. How often they disobeyed him in the wilderness, angering him in the desert. Yea, they turned back and tested El and pained the Holy One of Israel. They did not remember his hand on the day he redeemed them from the enemy, who set his signs in Egypt and his wonders in the field of Zoan. He turned their rivers into blood, also their streams that they might not drink. He sent swarms of flies against them, and they devoured them, also frogs, and they destroyed them. He also gave their crops to the stripping locusts and their labor to the locusts. He killed their vines with hail and their sycamore trees with sleet. He gave their cattle to the hail and their flocks to bolts of fire. He sent heat on the anger of them, fury and indignation and distress, a sending of messengers of evil. He leveled a path for his anger. He did not keep back their soul from death, but gave their life over to the plague. And he struck all the firstborn in Egypt, the first fruits of strength in the tents of Ham. And he led his people forth like sheep, and he led them like a flock in the wilderness. And he led them on safety, and they did not fear, but the sea flooded over their enemies, right? And that's why Yahweh's with us today. Yahweh's with us at Sukkot. Yahweh's with us in the wilderness. Yahweh is leading his people the same as he did back then. And he led them on safety, and they did not fear, but the sea flooded over their enemies. He brought them to the border of his holy place, his mountain that his right hand had gained. And he cast out the nations before them, and by a line he made a possession full to them. And he made the tribes of Israel to live in their tents. Yet he tested and provoked the Yet they tested and provoked the Most High Elohim, and they did not keep his testimonies. But they turned back and betrayed like their fathers. They veered aside like a deceitful bow. For they enraged him with their high places, and they provoked him to jealousy with their molten images. When Elohim heard, and he was provoked to anger, and he utterly rejected Israel, and he left the tabernacle of Shiloh, the tent he dwelt in among them. So even Yahweh says, right? He never asked for a temple. He never asked for a sanctuary. He's a Bedouin Elohim. He's a wilderness Elohim. He stayed in a tent, and that's where he was. And Israel just never learned it. They never learned that the wilderness is a temporary dwelling to teach us to trust in Yahweh and number our days. And they perished in the wilderness. And now it is in the end, Yahweh's given opportunity for us to succeed where they failed. And what will it be? Will we perish in the wilderness, or will we succeed? Hebrews 3 and verse 7. Hebrews 3 and verse 7. Says, because of this, even as the Holy Spirit says, today if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts to provoke him, as the murmurers did in the day of temptation in the wilderness. There where your fathers tempted me, even though they saw my works for 40 years. Because of this I was angry with that generation, said they always go astray in their heart, and they did not know my ways. So I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter my rest. Beware therefore, my brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart which does not believe. And you will be cut off from the living Elohim. But search your hearts each day until the day which is called the day, right? The day that he's coming. That not any one of you be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. For we have become partakers of Messiah, if truly from the beginning, the very end, we hold steadfast to this true covenant. So we have to embrace every gift, every trial. Life is a test. We have to pass this test in the second wilderness. 1 Peter 1 and verse 17. 1 Peter 1 and verse 17 says, and if you call on the Father, the one judging according to the work of each one without respect of faces, conduct the time of your sojourning in fear, knowing that not with corruptible things like silver or gold will we redeem from your worthless way of life handed down from your fathers, but with the precious blood of Messiah as a lamb without blemish and without spot. Indeed, having been preordained for this very purpose before the foundation of the world, but revealed in the last times because of you, the ones living, believing in Elohim through him, he raising him from the dead and giving glory to him, so that your faith and hope may be in Yahweh. Having purified your souls in the obedience of the truth, through the Spirit to sincere brotherly love, love one another fervently out of a pure heart, being regenerated not by corruptible seed, but incorruptible, through the living word of Yahweh, which abides forever. Because all flesh is as grass, and all glory of men is the flower of grass. The grass was dried, and its flower fell out. But the word of Yahweh remains forever, and this is the very word that was announced to you. So this is what it comes down to, right? We have to just keep our perspectives. We have to keep life in perspective. 2 Corinthians 4, in verse 11, life is fading grass. We have to appreciate what we've been given of the truth, the sacrifice, our sins being forgiven through the blood of Yeshua. 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 11. For we who live are always being delivered up to death on account of Yeshua, that also the life of Yeshua may be made manifest in our mortal flesh. Excuse me. So that death indeed is close to us, and life is near to you. But having the same spirit of faith, according to what has been written, I believe, therefore I spoke. We also believe, therefore we also speak. Knowing that he who raised up the Master Yeshua will also raise us through Yeshua and will present us with you. For all things are for your sakes, that the abundant grace may through the thanksgiving of many abound to the glory of Elohim. Because of this, we do not grow weary, but if indeed our outward man is being decayed, yet the inward man is being renewed day by day. For while the troubles of the present time are little and light, a great and limitless glory forever and ever is prepared for us. We do not rejoice in the things which are seen, but the things which are not seen. For the things being seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are everlasting. So that's the choice we have to make. Are we living our life for these things that we see that all rot, corrode, and end? Or are we living our life for the eternal things that Yahweh gives us? We have to die to the flesh daily to live by the Spirit eternally. John 4 and verse 31. John 4 and verse 31. But in the meantime, the disciples asked him, saying, Rabbi, eat. But he said, I have food to eat which you do not know. Then the disciples said to one another, no one brought him food to eat. Yeshua said to him, my food is that I should do the will of him who sent me, and I may finish his work. Do not say that after 4 months comes the harvest. Behold, I say to you, lift up your eyes and see the fields that are white and have ripened for the harvest already. And he that reaps receives a wage and gathers fruit unto life that is eternal, and the sower and the reaper together will rejoice. So where the sukkah fruits, you know, ripen and rot within a week and die, the fruits of the Spirit live forever. And we have to make sure that we're understanding that Sukkot and the wilderness show us we can't waste time. We must fulfill our purpose for the kingdom now. Matthew 10 and verse 5. Matthew 10 and verse 5. Yeshua sent these 12 out, charging them, saying, do not go in the way of the heathen, And do not go into a Samaritan city, but rather go to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And going on, proclaim, saying, the kingdom of heaven has drawn near. Heal sick ones, cleanse leopards, raise the dead, cast out demons. Freely you have received, freely you give. Do not accumulate gold, nor silver, nor copper in your belts, nor a wallet for the road, nor two coats, nor sandals, nor staff. For the worker is worthy of his food. And into whatever city or village you enter, search out who in it is worthy, and remain there until you go out. But entering into the house, greet it. And if the house truly is worthy, your peace will be upon it. But if it is not worthy, let your peace return to you. And whoever will not receive you, nor will hear your words, having gone out of that city or house, shake off the dust from your feet. Truly I say to you, it will be more tranquil to the land of Sodom and Gomorrah on judgment day than that city. Behold, I send you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. Therefore be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. But beware of men, for they will deliver you to the house of judgment, and they will scourge you in their assemblies. And also you will be brought before governors and kings for my sake, for the testimony to them and to the Gentiles. But when they deliver you up, do not be anxious how or what you should say, for it will be given to you in that hour what you should say. For you are not the one speaking, but the Spirit of the Father who speaks in you. But brother will betray brother to death, and the father his child, and children will rise up against parents and will put them to death. And you will be hated by all on account of my name, but the one enduring to the end, the same will be saved. And we're getting ready to go into that fifth seal. We're getting ready for this to be happening. So we have to think about it. You know, where is our focus? Is our focus on Sukkot? Is our focus on the kingdom mindset? Is our focus on the things of the world? One or the other. Wilderness is a learning ground for our job as an ambassador in the kingdom. Hebrews 11. Hebrews 11 and verse 8. Says, having been called out by faith, Abraham obeyed to go forth to a place which he was going to receive for an inheritance. And he went out not understanding where he went. By faith he resided as a foreigner in a land of promise, living in tents, with Isaac and Jacob, the joint heirs of the same promise. For he looked forward to a city having the foundations of which the builder and maker is Yahweh. Wow. So Abraham get up and walk. Abraham got up and walk. And he imagine he's out there living in tents with his son and his grandson, right? Joint heirs of the same promise. Just like Sukkot is doing. You know, Sukkot, you do it for 7 days, but in the wilderness, who knows? Once you enter the wilderness, there's how many stops that are left? Like I said, the Israelites were 42 stops in the wilderness. There's, when you look at the cycles of seven, you have seven sevens, 49, and then you have the Jubilee. So there's seven more stops to go in the wilderness, and we have no idea the stop we're going to go. So we don't know. Will we be living in tents? We might be. We might be living in tents out there. But Abraham didn't mind because he was looking for an eternal city. He was looking for that eternal city that Yahweh is bringing. Drop down to verse 13. These all died by way of faith, not having received the promises, right? They weren't looking for earthly promises. But seeing them afar, and being persuaded, and having embraced and confessed that they are strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For those saying such things make clear they seek a fatherland. And truly, if they remembered that from which they came out, they had time to return. But now they stretch forward to a better, that is a heavenly land. Therefore Yahweh is not ashamed of them, for him to be called their Elohim, for he prepared a city for them. So again, if we were looking for the worldly things, right? We have opportunity. Anybody can go back to Babylon, if you're Babylonian, you know, and live there. Or go back to whatever country you're coming from. But that's not the plan. The plan is moving forward. The plan is moving ahead. It's looking for that heavenly kingdom that Yahweh has there, not a temporary city like we're doing now, like our life is a temporary place, but an eternal city that will never end. Abraham and our forefathers knew that life is temporal. They never looked back. They looked for the heavenly kingdom. Deuteronomy 8 and verse 7. Deuteronomy 8 and verse 7 says, for Yahweh your Elohim brings you into a good land, a land of streams of waters, of fountains and depths that spring out of the valleys and the hills, a land of wheat and barley and vines and fig trees and pomegranates, a land of olive oil and honey, a land in which you will eat bread without want. You shall not lack anything in it, a land whose stones are iron, and you shall dig copper out of the mountains, and you will eat and be satisfied, and you will bless Yahweh your Elohim in the good land which he has given to you. And those are all the harvest fruits of Sukkot that are there, right? The wheat, the barley, the vines, the figs, the pomegranates, and the olive oil and the honey. The honey brings the sweetness to it all in the end. You don't need a lot. The Bible even says that. Don't take too much honey. You know, it'll get you sick. But enough just to add that sweetness. The sweetness that's on top of it. Both Sukkot and the wilderness, we live off the simple things of life, the simple things of the land. And, you know, it's great sometimes during Sukkot, if you are out tenting, you're really living off just the land that's around you. And Yahweh will provide for his people, and that's what the wilderness is all about, the same way. We all saw this through the Shemitah that just ended. Yahweh providing for us and showing that he's there. Last scripture, Matthew 16, verse 24 through 27. Matthew 16, 24 through 27. It says, then Yeshua said to his disciples, if anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself and let him bear his torture stake and let him follow me. For whoever may desire to save his life will lose it. But whoever may lose his life for my sake will find it. For what will a man be benefited if he shall gain the whole world but forfeits his soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul? For it is necessary for the Son of Man to come in the glory of his Father, and then with his holy cherubs he will reward each man according to his work. So that's Sukkot in the wilderness. Like I said, the same way with Sukkot that you see the branches getting yellow every day, and in just 7 days, how fast, you know, that the fruit can rot, the branches can turn brown. That our life goes the same way. You know, like I said, he said if you live 70 years, that's just 7 decades. It's not a long time. You think of 10 years, just think of 10 years ago. This is 2023. Think of 2013 and things you did then, and it was like, wow, 10 years went by fast. And there's only 7 of those in the average life. And that's if you make it that far. A lot of people don't make it till 70. You know, they die before that. It's really not that much time in this world, and it's only there for one reason. It's a test. It's a test to see if Yahweh can bless us with eternity, absolute eternity, billions and zillions and trillions, no time this way, no time that way, just living in eternity. But we have to pass the test. We have to prove to him that we're living for him, we believe in him, we're showing faith in him, and that his kingdom is the most important thing in our life. And that's why we have, every year we have Sukkot. And that's why now in the end, again, it was only the Israelites and us that were taken to this kind of wilderness journey. You can look in the Bible, a lot of people were taken to the wilderness, including Yeshua. But this kind of wilderness journey, only 2 groups of people go into. The Israelites went, and now we're in it here in the end. Life is a test, and we have a great reward waiting for us if we overcome in this life. Sukkot, tabernacles, teaches us to number our days and show us how temporal life really is. And like I said, just as the fruit and the color changes in a week, so is our life. And just think about it, just maybe 1 cycle of 7, maybe 2, Yahweh knows, not us. But we only have 1 or 2 more of these cycles before it's all over and the kingdom is here forever. What an honor Yahweh has honored us with the life he has given us to worship him and to use the gifts he has given us to bear fruit for his kingdom. The wilderness, as Sukkot, is temporary but necessary to make it into the kingdom. So I pray during these days that we think about that and we meditate on that, on what the important things of our life is, and especially now, like I said, where we're really living it, because the earlier holy days, you know, the Pesach, the unleavened bread, they are things that have already been fulfilled, and we keep them every year, and we think about the things. We think about what Yeshua has already done. We think about the taking the sin out of the life. We think about the Holy Spirit that has already been given, you know, on Shavuot. But now in the fall holy days, it's like they're all about real time. They're about things that are either here or to come, you know. Yom Kippur, the wedding supper. Sukkot, which is just around the corner. And the last great day where Yahweh's judgment will be on all humanity. So I pray you have a wonderful, blessed rest of Sukkot. And Yahweh bless. Chag Sameach.